The following programming is sponsored by MBC Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Stand by. Fire!
Back to the Project Chaos radio show. We took a little break last week. I'm sure you noticed. The week before that, it was Memorial Day. That was part of the reason why we needed to take the break. We're supposed to have a break on Memorial Day. We had done a pre-recorded podcast for Memorial Day. And then at the last minute, I got an invitation to go down to the Rising Sun VFW in Philadelphia and say a few words for the occasion. And it was a whole event by the VFW there, and I'm calling it the Rising Sun VFW, which I believe is still correct, but it has been renamed the Michael Crescens VFW. And I didn't want to title the show that because we have a whole Michael Crescens show and full podcast interview. If you haven't checked that out yet, I highly recommend that you do. After you listen to what I have to say today, maybe you'll understand a little bit better why that whole story is so important and also how it ties into what was going on there for Memorial Day. But anyway, to make a long story short, we had kind of built in a break for the Memorial Day weekend, pre-recorded show. Myself, my brother Michael, who helps me with the show, goes down to every show with me. We were like, hey, we've been running pretty hard with this. We're going to take the holiday weekend, and we're going to enjoy the weekend off. Well, that didn't happen. We end up down at this event, and it was incredible. It was really incredible. But it also takes a lot. And so last week, we ended up doing a replay. Now I'm here 2 weeks later to tell you the story of what the heck was going on. It all unfolded so quickly, and it consumed me very quickly. I had to, you know, quickly adjust gears on what we were doing for the show and also get ready to go down there and so forth. But it was really absolutely worth every bit of it. I'm going to tell you the whole story. I'll tell you this story. I got a few important announcements to update you on. And then if we have time left, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I see going on in the military. There's a few interesting stories that were sent to me. And I think it would be well for taxpayers to understand what exactly is going on in our military today. But let me go back to the Rising Sun VFW because that's the first story I want to tell you. Get down there, and there's a little Asian girl with her mom and maybe her aunt or grandmother or something like that. And the little girl's dressed up in a little fatigue. She's maybe 8, 7, 8, 9 years old, something like that. And she's carrying around a photo of her father, which I didn't even initially get a look at. But finally, I caught up to what was going on. It turns out her father was a Marine and had died back in 2012 in a motorcycle accident. And the little girl was there to honor her father on Memorial Day, which was interesting. And you got to realize a lot of these guys at the Rising Sun VFW are Vietnam veterans. I don't know this young Asian girl and her family. I don't know that they were Vietnamese, but I suspect that they might have been. I suspect they might, but they could have been, you know, some other Pacific Islander or Asian. You know, it doesn't really matter. But the point is this. That, you know, even through different cultures, especially for the Marine Corps, I can't speak to the other branches, but there's a connection. Her father was a Marine, and that supersedes everything. And there, she was coming to be with her extended military family. Do you understand how much it meant to her? How much it meant to me to be there, to participate in that? So this gets better. So she goes up to the, you know, master of ceremonies there, the, you know, the chief of the VFW, and she says, hey, I'd like to sing during the event. And I overhear him, he's saying, we're too packed full. And he told me to keep my time to 5 minutes, which was, I was like, that's not much time. That was for a variety of reasons I learned later. So I was watching this and I'm thinking, let her say what she's got to say. That was my thought. Let her go. Well, he did. Whatever went on. He must have been thinking the same thing. And they bring her on, and she sings God Bless America. It's just incredible. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a second, but let me work through this somewhat chronologically. The point is, as we're waiting there, and the this color guard there, I'll be as nice as I can. I don't know. I don't want to pick on these guys. The one guy wasn't even a veteran. This was the most ragtag color guard I ever saw in my life. And they did get the rounds off, so it was very good. They needed some new rifles, I think. But it was funny watching those guys. But while everybody's starting to gather, and we were there very early, a good hour or more early. We wanted to be there early. We wanted to meet everybody. We wanted to see everything behind the scenes. And the whole time this is going on, there's this little Asian girl walking around. And finally, I got to see what that was about. I had gotten the invitation to go down there. I don't know. It was like earlier that week, I guess. We had already made the decision that we were pre-recording Memorial Day weekend to take a break in there. And I got a call from my brother Joe Tyson, Sergeant Joe Tyson, Marine tanker from Vietnam, the 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade. He wrote a book, Unfortunate Sons. You got to check it out. Absolutely incredible book. So Joe calls me, and I was tied up when he called. I called him back the next morning. I said, what's going on? He said, yeah, I want you to come down to this VFW. Bring your family. I said, well, my family has plans that I had, so they're not coming. But I'll be there. He says, great. My brother Michael, who had also spoken to Joe, he said he was going too. And this VFW, I started to say earlier, the Rising Sun VFW, they've renamed it the Michael Crescens VFW. Joe Tyson introduced me to the Crescens family. Michael Crescens, if you don't know from my talking about it before, but he's the only Vietnam-era Medal of Honor winner from the Vietnam War in the Philadelphia area. And there's a statue of Michael down at the Vietnam Memorial down in Penn's Landing, Philadelphia. And he's just very iconic name here. Michael Crescens, the name of the Philadelphia VFW is the Michael Crescens the VA hospital. So he has a statue of VFW. There's a street down at the Jersey Shore named after him, and they have the VA hospital named after Michael. This guy's just, you know, a real hero in Philadelphia. And it was just great. It was a great honor to be there to speak, to be part of that, and to be there with his family. And my brother Michael came down. Like I said, he said, yeah, he's coming down. He was supposed to have the day off. He's a busy guy, been busy with the show. He said, nah, we're going to do this. So he actually came down to my house, which was on the way. He drove me down there too. He just drives me everywhere. So it was just great to have him there, have somebody to drive down there with. And I didn't really do any preparation. You know, this talk, I really just wanted it to be really from the heart in the heat of the moment. And it worked out really well. All I brought was actually the Michael Crescens book, No Greater Love. And, you know, it's interesting, by the way, I don't know if I said this before, that title, No Greater Love, I thought it was in reference to Joe Crescens' love of his brother, Michael Crescens, but that's not the meaning of it. The meaning of it is that Michael Crescens gave his life because he had there was no greater love than him standing up and doing that for his fellow soldiers. Incredible, really. Incredible. But anyway, I took a copy of the book. I just said, I'm going to wait and see. Well, it worked out good because when the MC said I had 5 minutes and it started raining right when the event, I'll tell you about that too. But anyway, the only real prepping that I did, about 10 minutes before the event started, I broke away from everybody, broke away from the socializing, and I just took a walk around the entire VFW, inside and out. And then let me just take this whole place in a second. That was my preparation, if you will. I was shocked when we got there as early as we were. There was a good, I don't know, 6, 8, maybe more people there. They had all these crosses set up out front, and maybe I'll talk about that a little bit more too. I can talk about it now. You know, when I walked around, they had these crosses all set up in the front, signifying the lives that had been lost from that post, that VFW. And they were double-sided. You know, these are guys that died in combat. And they're double-sided crosses, the whole front of this place. And I saw it when we first got there. And like I said, there's 8, 10 people call it there, but the crosses were all set up. They had chairs set up outside. Podium was already out there. And it was really early. A small crowd started to form. the color guard had finished their practice and they were mingling around, and more people started showing up. The police were there very early. They closed the road. And the significance of it all started to hit me a little bit. And that's when I took my walk around the property. And when I was coming back around to the front, I walked around the far side, so coming back around to the front, and I'm coming up behind these crosses in the front yard. And the significance of it just really started to hit me. And what I mean by that, number one, that all these men, and maybe there was women there too, I didn't note any female names, but I'm sure there were. In this case, it was men. But that all these men have given their lives, given up. Given up what? Families, futures, friends, all the things that matter, all the things that make a life, I guess you'd say. I guess if you're depressed, you say, well, they were spared the agony too. True enough, true enough. But think about the children that weren't born, or the children that didn't know their fathers or grandfathers. And it just hit me, the importance of what we're doing and what we're talking about and why we were there that day and how important it is that we go there and do it. And I think it was at that moment, you know, that I knew what I needed to say. And we get started. And it was the same thing. It was that little girl. They bring her up like first of all the things, right? And she sings God Bless America. This little 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old girl. God bless them. I can't sing for anything. I won't torture you with that. And it just, I don't know. This little Asian girl standing there in front of a bunch of people, a couple hundred people, I don't know, that she doesn't even know. But her community, the people, right? What a symbol of the community, the people, and what we fight for. She symbolizes it right there. Her family. That's the face of our extended military family. Not black or white or brown, but green, just like she was wearing. It was a symbol of that. I don't know. There was another symbol, by the way. It rained. When I say rain, it started pouring. I'm going to sound a little mainstream media here. It was a deluge. On an epic scale, biblical scale, really. I'm learning. This is the way you create excitement. Just exaggerate the heck out of everything. It was raining pretty doggone hard. And I'm not bothered by getting wet. We were getting really wet. Like, this was not just a light, steady rain. And I thought to myself, what is the meaning of this? The Joe Crescent's mentioned to me later, and I did remember from the book, it was the same on the day that Michael Crescens was laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery. It poured like hell. Now, here we are back at the Michael Crescens interview, VFW. Little girl's going to sing God Bless America, and it's pouring again. It's pouring again. And I thought, what is the meaning of this? What could it possibly be? Maybe God's way of assuring us that he displeases war. Although... My brother Joe Crescens, Michael Crescens' brother, said he thinks it was maybe Michael Crescens thinking maybe he just wanted to stir things up a little bit. I don't know, you know. It's good to think about it, I guess. So after I walked around the building, I had to decide what I was going to say. Not the words, but the message, you know what I mean? And it kind of flows like music when you speak from the heart. I knew the message, and that was to remember and honor. Just explain to the good people who were standing there in the rain why any of this would matter to them and how important it is. The crosses, I'll tell you, told the story on their own. I didn't have to say anything. It was a really great opportunity for me. I met the Crescents family. I had interviewed them. I said, hopefully you got a chance to listen to it. The radio show. The radio show was incredible. We pulled out different clips, but the full interview, you really get it captured in a different way. You got to check it out. But I feel like I got to know them. I feel connected to them in a weird way. I don't want to sound like a stalker. You know, they're going to be listening. What do you mean? I mean, I'm moving in. What do you think I'm talking about? No, really great people. Great people. And so I got to meet them in person. That was fantastic. We got to spend a little time there. I mean, we were there, you know, probably half the day or longer. And, We were inside the hall in the club room, and I was looking around, and a lot of it was very dated, inside and outside. There's like a half a flight of steps going in. You know, it's funny, when these things were built, steps were allowed. These days, nobody wants to deal with steps. Nobody could have imagined how dangerous steps were going to be. It's really true, too. But they have like a lift thing mounted out there, right on the front of the building, you know, because there are handicapped people that need to get in and out of there. And so no proper elevator or anything like that. And yeah, they're obviously making do. Everything was neat and clean, I'll say that. They served some hot dogs inside after the event. There was some beer and refreshments, and it was great. The camaraderie was great. The club room downstairs, we were up in the hall, I guess you'd call it, down in the club room with a bar down there and pool tables and whatnot. It looked like a pretty happening place. It really did. I think it needs a little bit of a facelift, some updating. I have no idea, you know, what the finances of these VFWs are. But I think as veterans, and the reason that I'm bringing all this up, you know, we got to think about the legacy of the VFW a little bit. We really do. And there's a lot of American institutions that are going by the wayside. And maybe that's fine. Things run their course. But I think we need to ask ourselves as veterans whether or not we want to give up the VFW, or whether or not it's a good idea that we not have a VFW. Is that something that we want, or that we want to allow to happen? I'll say this, at least politically as a group, whatever you want to call it, it's not a large number of us combat veterans. It's a very small number, only about 2.5 million, with about 800,000 of those, about a third of those being Vietnam veterans that are not going to be around much longer. Probably over the next 10 years, you're going to see that number go effectively to zero, you know, leaving us with a 1.5 million, 1.8 in a country of 330, 350 million people. Do we want to have a voice? Do we want to have a connection of like-minded people? I think there's a real value of it. And I'll say this. I don't want to be, you know, come here sounding like I'm the cheerleader of the VFW. I'm speaking to you as a veteran. I don't work for the VFW. I don't have any endorsements to offer the VFW or anything like that. Until a year ago, I wasn't even a member. I was never even interested in it at all. Most of the people that I had heard anything about it, which was not a lot, and it wasn't like I was asking, but I only ever heard negative things. That should have been a big flag in itself, really, when I look back and think on it. Sometimes, you know, you hear everybody speaking negatively. It's a good idea to go look for yourself. But I just say all that to put it in context. I was proven wrong. We launched the book, the show, and it was my little brother who connected me with the Red Hill VFW and a guy named Tom Sally up there. And they said, hey, would you come up here and, you know, do a little book presentation? I said, I would love to. And I really didn't have time to even get in. I said, just set it up and I'll be there. I was so busy at the time. And then about 2 or 3 weeks before the event, I thought, I should go at least do a little recon, at least go meet, you know, this guy and see what's going on, see what I'm stepping into, you know. And I had been in that VFW as a kid, many, 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 many years before. And my aunt and uncle lived up there in Red Hill, and a little townhouse up there back in the day. It's really funny looking back on it. And then I think my Uncle Rich was a member there, maybe an associate member. I don't believe he ever was a combat veteran. But anyway, I finally go back. It was my first time, you know, setting foot in a VFW as an adult, as a veteran. I don't know what to expect. And I was blown away. I was blown away. Now, you know, I don't know about all these VFWs, but the ones I've seen around here, they're very dated. And it's the same thing for the one in Red Hill. You know, it's like a painted concrete block, and it's not really a modern parking lot. And inside, there's dark paneling, and the bars. Well, but the same thing, all nice and clean. But here's the thing with Tom Sally. The guy really had a vision for what to do with the club, how to tie in the community in many, many ways. Really amazing what he did with that VFW to turn it into not just a happening place, but really a center for that town, for that community, an anchor. Really, really incredible work that he's doing, not just for veterans, but to serve the community as a whole. And you can say what you want, but as veterans, we've always served. We should continue to serve on some level. And I know it's going to ebb and flow. We're all busy. You do what you can. We don't all have to carry everything. But it's good that as veterans, that we have a united front in the community, that people see us and respect us for what we're doing to help the community. And that in turn will help other veterans, I believe, and help to keep our military strong, our community strong, and our country strong. Call me crazy, but I'll tell you this. I think guys like Tom Sally would 100% agree of how important that work is. So he's, I wasn't able to attend, regrettably. He's no longer the commander up there. And I can't believe he's just moving on. I have to catch up with him at some point and see what's happened. I can't believe he's just walking away from all this. He gave me no indication of that. I was a little surprised when I heard that he was moving out of there as the commander. It's great to get new blood in, though, as well. And I also don't know what's involved. I don't know if it's a paid position. He gets a little stipend. Is it worth it? I don't get the feeling that it's a full-time paid thing, I can tell you that. But I'm sure it's basically like a full-time job, that's for sure. But I found the whole thing to be very exciting there, what Tom Sally was doing. And the VA does have a lot to VA. The VFW, the VA too. Let's not leave the VA out. But I'm talking about the VFW. The VFW, it does have a lot to offer. And for families too, you know. And I think it's a reasonable price. The cost, you know, to go there, to be a member is very affordable. And I think it's a great deal with everything they do. I think there could be more done. I've got a little bit of experience on managing events and volunteer organizations and whatnot. I don't want to sound like I'm some kind of expert. I'm not. But I could see a few ideas that could be thrown into the mix. And it's not going to be me to do that, unfortunately, at least not right now. But I do want to, you know, try and get the word. Hey, get involved. Go join the VFW. I don't even know the details. If you're not a combat veteran, there's other ways you can become a member. So, you know, if it's something you're interested in, go check it out and find out how you can support the VFW. Trust me, they're not scary. They'll be happy to talk to you. But especially for us as veterans, it's important. I'm going to use that color guard. Here you go. And God help me if these guys listen to this. They're there volunteering their time. And they look like a bunch of schmucks. I'm sorry. I don't know other way to put it. It was, you know, it's good for the community and everything. But behind the scenes, we got to self-critique here. You know what I'm saying? That's why we need good younger veterans involved. That there's a little snap and pop out there. One guy, the Marine in his dress blues, he was the only one that knew how to handle that rifle. The other guys were all like a fish out of water. And God bless them for standing up to help. I mean that. But we could do better than that. I want that to be the symbol of the VFW right there. That sloppy color guard. All right? We need some young blood in there. And then we're going to gain the attention and respect of the community. But I also want to talk about the commanders and the organizers. And if you're not one, you know, feel free to share all your bright ideas and no help. Everybody leading the events and loves that. Hey, you know what you could do? And it is helpful on occasion, but I can't. I'm like, yeah, I love all the great ideas. I get it for the show, too, for Project. You know, it would be great. I know. It would be awesome. Why don't you do it for me? I have no more time for it. But anyway, for the commanders and the organizers, I think that the events are key. You have to be getting people in and purposely inviting people in at least once a year, 2, 3, 4 times a year. Probably 2 or 3 is good. I also, with the events, you know, think about the logistics. The situation there, I was shocked with the heavy rain at how well the crowd responded. Nobody left. Very few people even had umbrellas. Now, that being the case, how much would it have been to get a case of those disposable ponchos to hand out? Some towels, some snacks, some water, first aid. The sound system was not pre-checked. Very disciplined. The worst thing you can do is start an event. Hey, can you hear me? Everybody hear me okay? Test. It sounds horrible, whether it's on the radio or whether it's an event. You should have that done ahead of time. But here's something else I'm going to tell you very important, because I ran a volunteer organization for a few years, a large scale, meaning probably larger than any VFW scale, you know what I mean? And there's a lot of volunteers. Every year we had to get, it was a youth football program, flag football program, if you want to know. And so we needed coaches and assistant coaches and snack stands and field helpers and referees. Oh, the referee is horrible getting referees. Nobody wanted a referee. You had to get everybody trained. It was a lot. It was a lot. But this is very important. You have to make sure that things are set up, that the volunteers have an enjoyable time. I've seen it so many. We ended up hanging out. We helped put some chairs. I didn't really do much. My brother Michael jumped in. God bless him. He's helping put the chairs away. That's because that's how we do things. But, yeah, it's like you got one guy there. It's got to put all these tables and chairs away, or two guys, and one guy guiltily goes and helps. It's horrible. Absolutely horrible, and happens, like, all the time. Many hands make light work. That's kind of the mantra to follow. And a lot of times you start building that mantra early on. Make sure you have, you know, short shifts. Like 3 hours on your feet for a volunteer is a long time. You know, somebody, if they want to sign up for two shifts, maybe you try and do a two not connect. I mean, you can work with people, whatever they want to do, I understand. But I'm just trying to say, if you're organizing an event like that, you want to try and do what you can to make sure that everybody has an enjoyable time, including the volunteers, and make sure that they have continue their passion for it, and then they show up again and again. But it was really just a really incredible time. We'll take a little break here to mention a couple other things. And then we'll be back. I want to talk about some of the things going on in our military. I'll see you back in a couple of minutes.
It's not every day that you need a surveyor or civil engineer, but if you're in business, own property, or developing real estate, you know how critical it is to your project to make sure that you get the best. Everything has to be done correctly. It's important that those details are exact to ensure the success of the project. Well, my good friend Michael Tacanelli from STA Engineering is the best there is. It was my first job when I got home from the Marine Corps, working on a survey crew, while Michael back then was the party chief. We hit it off well because of his relentless, disciplined approach. It was something that I agreed with. And I learned a little bit about surveying, an ancient craft that's now done with modern tools, but it still requires a high level of skill and professional expertise. Michael and his team bring all three: skill, expertise, and of course all the latest tools and technology. The entire package of surveying and engineering, allowing them to provide builders and developers, businesses, and property owners with reliable survey, design, and engineering for land development projects in southeastern Pennsylvania. For your next project, you're going to want to make sure you have the best possible support. Do yourself a favor and hire Michael Tacanelli, STA Engineering. They're already serving some of the area's largest developers, and they've done work in just about every municipality in the county. STA Engineering. Ask for Michael Tacanelli. I want to take a moment to share a little personal recommendation with you. Although I've spoken at quite a few events now, I didn't have any good video of me actually speaking in front of people. When we scheduled the book tour, I wanted to get some good video. Well, we reached out to a company called MAV, stands for Media, Art, and Video. I'm going to tell you, if you need any video, print design, or art, I highly recommend you take a look at what they have to offer at officialmav.com. That's officialmav.com. Media, Art, and Video. They did a great job for us. Of course, they covered all the basics of being there on time, highly organized and ready for the event. But they really went above and beyond, capturing great video, making adjustments where needed, making sure that the final product was a perfect 10. I'm happy to say they really delivered on that. If you need video of any kind, media, design, be sure to check out officialmav.com. That's officialmav.com.
If you're going to be in the Philadelphia area on Saturday, July 13th, here's an event you don't want to miss. Project Refit, partnering with the Red Horse Motoring Club in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, for a great car show, entertainment, an event like no other. You don't want to miss it. Noon to 4, Saturday, July 13th. It's a long link. They're using a QR code to promote this, which obviously we can't put out on the radio. I'll put the link in the show notes below. Be sure to check it out. If you can't get it there, go to projectrefit.us. That's Saturday, July 13th, noon to 4, Project Refit, partnering with the Red Horse Motoring Club, Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Saturday, July 13th, go to projectrefit.us.
Yeah!
down there at the Rising Sun, Michael Crescent's VFW, I'll tell you, I'll never forget it as long as I live. It was just really incredible. I can't be thankful enough to my brother Joe Tyson, who got us down there, my brother Michael, who went, and the opportunity to meet Joe and Val Crescent. Joe's the brother of Michael Crescent. One of the things that Joe did, he gave us another challenge coin, another, this is actually the Corporal Crescent's coin with the Medal of Honor on the back, but you display this, I think, to the front. So I'll call it the Corporal Crescent's coin, but I also have the Medal of Honor coin as well as another coin. And they'll have a special place in my home studio, which is all but a section for my family pieces, is decorated with really just very special military symbolisms. Symbolisms, is that a proper word? I don't know. My discharge, for example, that's the first one. I wake up every day and thank God for that. But beyond that, there's a few coins that are very important to me. I never had a coin until, what was it, 2015 for our 25-year Alpha Battery reunion. I posted a whole show about that as the 30-year reunion. It was the 25. Well, that didn't go well. What are you going to do? But I never owned a challenge coin until 2015. Here we are 9 years later, and I don't know, I've got probably about 20 of them, and all of them are incredible. But throughout my studio, my office at home, I've got the coin collection, things like my discharge, a couple of live 5.56 rounds that somehow fell out of my sea bag. What else? Sand from Iwo Jima. It's just incredible. Some of the letters that I have, the photographs. It's just really incredible stuff. All means a lot to me. And this Michael Crescent's coin that Joe gave us while we were down there. And I think that whole scene, you know, it just really symbolizes a lot about the veteran community. Project Refit, if you get a chance to look into that, I mentioned over the break, take a look at what they're doing. It's interesting. I see veterans with these interesting, unique ideas on how to connect with each other these days. They're using like a survival training thing, which I don't think is like their main shtick. I don't know. I could be wrong, but it was part of it. And it was like, you know, our buddies at ProjectChaosMMA.org, right? They're using MMA fighting as a way to help veterans, you know, deal with transition issues, right? And do that in a healthy way. So it's interesting you have all these different ideas. So whether it's the VFW or you connect somehow better with one of these groups, your unit, I think, is a great place. I found all of it to be very rich. Very rich. Not without its complications at times. Life is life and people are people. What are you going to do? But generally speaking, it's been almost entirely positive. It really has. And this particular day down there, that little Asian girl, and I don't know if I'm able to paint the picture without you seeing it, but up there singing in front of this group of people, wow, she could trust them. She said, because you're veterans, I trust you. That was it. That was the simple reason. And just seeing that VFW and the police closing off the street and being, you know, having the opportunity to be down there with my brother Michael, who's been with me through the whole radio journey, and just watching the crowd develop and the police shut the road down and the significance of all that. And I came around the property and I see those crosses there, and it struck me. The significance of why we do what we do. And if that wasn't enough, this little girl gets up there and sings this song, God Bless America. With everything going on today, I remember two years ago, we were putting up flags maybe for the 4th of July. I know it was hot. Seven flags, evenly spaced across the front of the yard. I had my daughter help me. I pasted off. She planted the flags. She says, can I stand out here for a minute? She stood out there waving the flag. She looked like a little Statue of Liberty. We have this wall out front. So she's standing up over the road, and she's waving this thing. Well, you should have seen how people responded. It was unbelievable. The cars were honking. People were waving. It's just something about young people being patriotic that, especially in today's day and age, we find so incredible, which is kind of a shame in itself. But I think we should stick with the positive. To see her on Memorial Day in front of that crowd singing that song, it meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to me to be there. And then it starts pouring rain. And I thought, this is just a symbol of my entire military service right here, just getting crapped on and smiling the whole way, just like I did every day of active duty. Smiled, smiled, smiled. I was glad I took that walk around the building, that was my preparation, that I just came around and took it all in, because that's what I needed. And to get the impact of walking up on those crosses like that and getting to meet the Crescens, and really, for me, the first time really being able to take in a VFW in that way. And it's made me think, and part of why I was excited to share this with you, what is the legacy of the VFW? It's only up to us. What do you think? What do you think that, up there at the corporate VFW, they're going to take care of it? Who do you think that is? It's up to the local captains, commanders, I guess they're called. They need help. We need positive people that can come in and work as a team and jump in and deal with things even when maybe they're not running so well all the time, and help make it better. Be open-minded and say, hey, what do we want our legacy to be? I don't know. I don't even know much about it. It's like I said, up until a year ago, not even, up until a couple of months ago, I wasn't even a member and never really interested in it. But Tom Sally up there at the Red Hill VFW, he really inspired me, and I'll be back again. You know, it's something I'll have on my list. People say, why? I like it there. I like being around the veterans. Not all the time. Not every day, I can tell you that. What are you going to do? But I think it's important that people get involved, that we have good events, that we put out a good showing, and that people understand that, hey, veterans are part of the community. We're a strong and important part of the community. And that we need people that are going to stick with us, right? We need people. Veterans need help. The community needs veterans, and that's how we get things done, working together. And it's just a better model. When you look at what's going on there at the Red Hill VFW, the community's response and the support to the VFW, and vice versa. The VFW, by being well grounded and well run, is inspiring the community to come out and organize and do productive things for the community. And it's just incredible to see and watch. It really is. And for me, the opportunity to meet somebody like Sergeant Joe Tyson, and that leads to meeting Joe Crescens. Unbelievable, really. Unbelievable. And that leads to going down and speaking in the rain to a crowd of Vietnam veteran families at a VFW in Philadelphia. If you would have told me a year ago, I never could have imagined. It meant a lot to me. It really did. So there's a couple of things that I want to talk about since we have a couple of minutes, and that is what's going on at some of our military installations and what the military is dealing with today. I bring this up, you know, a couple of things that we wanted to make a decision on with the subject matter of the show. Was not to be political. And let me just address that a second. It's not really possible not to be political. It's inherently political because it's pro-veteran. But really, it's pro-USA. So I don't know. It's about as non-political as I can say. But I'm openly tell you I'm here to support veterans in our military. And as part of that, I talk about what's going on, which is really risky on a variety of fronts. And I'll say openly right now, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just asking some questions, really. Other people, I think, should maybe be looking into this, not me. But I do believe it's our responsibility at our age as veterans that we're the ones that need to question and make sure that our young Marines, sailors, soldiers, and airmen are going into a proper military that's as safe as it can be, as well equipped as it can be, as well trained as it can be. We all should want to work together for that, I would think. I don't know. I would think that everybody would find that to be important. Is that political? I don't think that part is political. But I just want to explain to you why. I'm critical of the generals. Yeah, I'm critical of the corruption. I'm critical of decisions that don't make sense, that I have to ask myself, you know, where's the money flowing in all this? What are we supposed to do? Sit back silently and not say anything? I don't think that's the way it's supposed to work at all. I don't think it's what we fought for. We're going to go serve and go off a million miles away in some case and come back. But you're not allowed to have an opinion on anything. You're not. From here forward, you will only ever speak positively about our military. I don't think any of us ever agreed to that. It's our obligation to speak up. We have every right and every obligation to do what's right. And that means speaking up about these important things that people understand, at least the veteran perspective. And I'm not alone. You know, I don't just spew this stuff out. I look into it. I talk to other people about it. I see what other opinions there are about it. I share that frequently. But, you know, there's only so far I can go as well. I say, I don't know everything. There's a couple interesting things I wanted to mention to you. Five U.S. military cemeteries in places that you would never really think of that are just a reminder of the broad veteran sacrifice. It's really amazing. Some of the places mentioned are Algeria, Libya, Greece, Norway, China, Indonesia, and Vietnam, not too surprisingly. There's actually like 26, I think, of these foreign cemeteries that are managed by this cemetery commission, whatever it is. And I don't know, you know, which ones fall on the list. There might be something interesting to look into. I know this. I happened to be looking into to see if there was any monuments on Iwo Jima. And what I found, there is, actually. There's two, I believe. I forget the different markers off the top of my head. But in both cases, it's absolutely hideous. The poor maintenance and the representation of in terms of what happened there, how poorly represented these monuments are. Now, I think that these cemeteries, on the other hand, I think are really well maintained. The people there in these host countries really appreciate the sacrifices that Americans made. But I'll say this. You don't really find that kind of thing anywhere else in the world. Name me another country that has made so many sacrifices for so many other countries, and you only find it with the American veteran. It's truly, truly something unique. This is an interesting story I wanted to mention. America's first woman POW in Vietnam was never found. And I wanted to mention this for a couple of different reasons. One, that there was things going on in Vietnam that I don't think were ever really revealed in terms of how the Vietnamese were just slaughtering people, Vietnamese that weren't aligned with them as well as Americans and other foreigners, just absolutely brutal. They had no respect for human life, human dignity, it seemed at all. None at all. It was just horrific, some of the things that were going on. And this is one example of it. Many POWs, many MIA in Vietnam, their families, they didn't know if they were dead or alive for years, and they never got any closure. Really horrible. And listen to this. If you're worried about our national security and what's going on at the border and don't think that it has security implications, United States Navy bases, this doesn't speak to any other bases, are ejecting foreign nationals 2 to 3 times a week. The United States Navy-based security personnel are catching and evicting a steadily increasing number of foreign nationals, particularly Chinese citizens, attempting to get national security secrets. They'll have cover stories like, I'm a student or I'm an enthusiast or whatever, I like ships, blah, 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 blah. I'm sure they're very nice. This thing of our military bases getting penetrated by foreign nationals is happening more and more. Really hard for us to tell the underlying motives. This is from a spokesperson from the Navy. Really concerning when you think about it, and how long before that probing of the wire turns into something more significant. I've said this after September 11th, without getting into anything too gory here, but it really would not be hard for a couple of coordinated teams within any country really to wreak havoc. I believe our CIA has probably done it on a number of occasions. But if you think about a couple of 20-man teams, you know, 2 or 3 up and down the coast, 2 or 3 here, car bombs, ports, airports, things like that, easily attacks that are very difficult to defend. You put a car bomb in the airport parking lot, now you're not going to disrupt the air traffic, at least not for very long, but it's going to wreak fear. And you start doing that in military installations, like with what's talking about here. It's very concerning. And I don't know, I'm going to sit here and speculate scenarios that may never happen. But the point is that there's clearly a security risk that's going on there. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the broader military, some changes in the Army, and what's going on with our military leadership. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with that and wrap it up. See you in a minute. Blows my mind, really, that we're hearing about it publicly, that there's this kind of security concern at Navy bases. Not hearing anything about other bases. I know this, and it was down in Parris Island last year, last May, 13 months ago. What I was interested to see was the fact that even at Parris Island, which I have to believe would be like a low-level attack site, right? I don't think it has a whole lot of strategic value, I wouldn't think. The Marine Corps has 2 recruiting depots, San Diego, Paris Island. I think they may be looking at a future where they just close Paris Island. The real estate there has to be incredibly, incredibly valuable as a tourist destination. And the Marine Corps is probably saying, why do we need two boot camps? I don't know. It's an interesting thought, but security may be one of them replicating things. But either way, outside of that discussion, I was very interested to see that there at Paris Island, every building had jersey barriers around it. Everything was highly secure there. And I thought that was a little surprising to me. And I think that that was done after September 11th, really, that kind of security put in place. But here they are today still considering the same thing. But we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But I say to myself, wow, you would think there would really be a coordinated national effort between, you know, national policing, FBI, things like that, local training, as well as where the bases are located. So anyway, what are you going to do? I saw this and I thought I'd mention it. The Army is trying to reorganize, restructure some of the way that they fight. And I thought that some of this was good. It would be the fifth major reorganization, I didn't know this, since 2003. So 11 years, every other year, they're reorganizing the Army. Very fascinating to me that that's going on. It's got to be crazy chaotic. Maybe it's necessary. I really don't know. Way beyond my area of expertise or knowledge, okay? But this is the part that I found interesting. It seems to me that they are heavily wanting to add drone defenses to their existing units, meaning an expansion of the military, not so much they're calling it a reorganization, because until it's authorized, until it goes through the political process. But on some level, I believe this is what's necessary. So, you know, who knows? We don't get to know everything. The military is not going to come out and display all their secrets just because some big mouth down in Philadelphia brings it up. You know what I'm saying? But I think on some level, common sense does prevail. At least we can only hope. I see this as a good thing. I see it as a good thing, at least that the Army is moving in that direction. That they're saying, hey, that the threat of the drones means, and the way that we need to counter that is with our own drones in reverse, that we need to be able to respond drone for drone. Here's another interesting story, and I think there's a bit of a good spot with this as well. Russia is way outproducing the United States and Europe in production of artillery shells. Not just the shells, but the artillery pieces themselves. And I believe that's the same for tanks and whatnot. China as well. Now, I don't know, you know, that we need to get into an arms race. I think our military is pretty capable in regard to hardware and things like that. Ammunition? I don't know. It seems to have gotten tested in Ukraine. I really question the amount of artillery being used over there, by the way. The preparatory fire for the liberation of Kuwait was 90,000 rounds. Now, and maybe I'm looking at this wrong. It's not my area of expertise, but they're like firing like a million in Ukraine. Like a million artillery rounds? Like what's left of the country, I would begin to wonder. It's crazy. I'm thinking, how does that even get executed? Like how many batteries do they have that are firing at what pace to be able to continue that kind of thing? Anyway, it just stressed to me the importance that we can't let it go. This force redesign nonsense, oh, we're just going to go to drones with no tanks and artillery, I don't believe is the answer. Sadly, maybe the Army's a little ahead of the Marine Corps on this, but at least it sounds like on some level our military is getting prepared or trying to get prepared for this drone threat. Seems like we're a little late on it, but I don't know, who am I to say. All right, one of my criticisms has been, and some of it's a little bit funny, I know, we've got to make it entertaining, catchy on some level. I've said, hey, fat generals. I don't trust fat generals. It's just a simple observation. Norman Schwarzkopf was the Secretary of Defense, I guess, or whatever it was when I was serving. No, that would have been Colin Powell. General Schwarzkopf, what was he, the theater commander or whatever? I should probably know this. And he wasn't exactly a small guy, but we did respect him. We did respect him. So there are exceptions, I suppose. But I'm just telling you that a guy that doesn't have enough respect for himself to take care of himself, at least while he's in uniform, I like to carry a couple extra pounds. You know, I'm no Charles Atlas over here these days. Was our platoon commander. I love what he says. He says, I stopped running when the Marine Corps stopped paying me to run. I say there's two places I run to, maybe three. the refrigerator in the liquor store, but occasionally the bathroom as well. I know, I shouldn't go there. But I don't really do too much running either. I do like to get outside. I do like to take care of myself. I'll tell you this. If I had to wear a uniform and command a couple of thousand men into combat, I think I would take it a little bit more importantly as part of my job duties, as I did when I was in. But anyway, here's what I thought was very interesting. The outgoing Joint Chief of Staff, General Mark Milley, was inspecting the troops during an Armed Forces farewell tribute at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall on September 29th, back in 2023 in Arlington, Virginia. And there was a change of guard going on, okay? And here's what's very interesting. Since retiring from the military last year, the former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, has become a senior advisor to, what would you expect? Maybe an arms company, a consulting company? No, J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. Joined the faculties of Princeton and Georgetown and embraced the lucrative paid speaking circuit. So from going from military pay of $200,000 a year, he's probably going to go to a couple of million dollars. What is he doing at J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, I have to wonder? That's fascinating to me. Now, we don't know what he has a degree in, his experience. What is going on here? It's very strange. Suddenly, he's on the faculties of Princeton and Georgetown. There's consultants, literally, that help these generals get these careers. Perfectly legal. And I'm sure if you talk to the general, you have to say, well, Chris, did you get a job when you got out of the Marine Corps? And I would say, well, yes, I did. Yes, I did. I don't know what he's doing that I necessarily have a problem with what Milley is doing. I kind of question the J.P. Morgan situation a little bit, but I say I don't know how that could be necessarily be a breach of military confidence there that he's working for a bank. It's like James Bradley's father. He got out of the Navy. He was on Iwo Jima. He's a flag raiser on Iwo Jima. You know what his career was? He ran a funeral home after that. My brother Matt runs a crematorium. I mean, this is what you do. You get out of the military. Now, these guys are retiring, and they're getting a nice retirement, and it's not just $200,000 a year salary. They get their royal butts kissed up and down. A car, a driver, security, blah, 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 blah. I don't know when they retire. I believe they still get base housing. I could be wrong. I don't know what the deal is, really. Why isn't it more commonly known? I don't know. I guess I could look into it. It's not like I have, really. All I'm saying is, you know, I don't know, if Mark Milley was going to get out and go teach at an elementary school and donate all the money to the VFW, we'd be praising that, right? So, you know, there are things I think that they, you know, morally, we're not saying legally here, are allowed to do. But then there's other things that are going on. Recently retired Chief of Space Operations from the Space Force, General John J. Raymond, for example, has joined the board of directors for aerospace companies Impulse Space and Axiom Space, as well as becoming senior managing director for investment firm Cerebus Capital Management. General James McConville served as chief of staff of the Army before retiring last year, has joined the board of directors of a drone manufacturer, Edge Autonomy, and aerospace investment firm AE Industrial Partners. Here's where I have big, big concerns about when these deals are getting made and how they're being made, right? Because you've got the commandant of the Marine Corps has shut down artillery units and everybody's going, what are you doing? And I'm saying to myself, what's going to happen when he retires? What's going to happen when he retires? Where is he going? Is he going to go work for a drone company too? He's pushing all these drones. I don't know. And listen, I'm not accusing anybody of nothing. I don't know. I have to assume that these guys are smart enough to know that they're in the public eye, that it's all being done completely legally, okay? And yes, they have the right to go work and earn money and, you know, do whatever they want. I don't know, even as a general. I mean, you can have a side job as a Lance Corporal. Just a general can't have a side job. I don't know. I don't know what the rules are. But when you have these cockamamie decisions being made, and then suddenly they're all going to work. And how much are they doing to help, say, other veterans get jobs? What are they doing to help veterans? Are you telling me, oh, yeah, we're very veteran. It's not just the general's going to go. He's going to make sure that, you know, 1,000 of his guys get great jobs. They're not even getting any of that. Nothing. It's just a complete turning their backs. And listen, I'm just going to tell you the net effect of this. It's a loss of confidence in leadership. And I'm not the only one who said that. I'm not the only one who's questioning this. About 2 weeks ago, Annapolis graduated its newest round of officers, and the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told the graduates there, the Marines and sailors, that they're going to be leading future sailors and Marines through tension and uncertainty. Yeah, well, he failed to mention poor planning and terrible leadership that's being undermined by the jobs that these officers are taking post-military service. And it's corrupt. It's badly corrupt. It's becoming a real black eye on our military. How much of it's going on at the VA and other places? What do you do about it, really? I don't know. We need to make sure that we have a great military, that our legacy continues. And I'll tell you, our help is needed now as much as ever. I said it before. We not only have the right, but the obligation to speak up and speak out about it. And when you get a chance, go check out your local VFW. See if it's something for you. See if it's something you can help out with. Either way, I'm telling you, it's great to connect with veterans. We'll be back next Monday. I hope to see you there. Make it a great day.